and welcome to Monocle's Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Today we'll be wandering through three exhibitions around the globe. We head to the UK for the Performance Art Festival Block Universe, to Norway for a Takeshi Murata exhibition, and finally to New York for a Philippe Pareno exhibition. And to go through all of them with me, I welcome Francesca Gavin, artist, author, editor and critic.
Hello.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yep.
Top billing.
Yep.
For the Gavin.
I'm very happy with that.
It's good. That is all coming up on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Francesca.
Hello. How
looking,
are you?
I'm very well. You're looking fighting fit. Fit as a fiddle, fit as a flea, whatever it is, it's with an F. It's good. Fit as a Francesca.
It is my favourite letter of the alphabet,
is
not
it?
Surprisingly.
There we go. You own it. You're owning it today.
It's a very good letter.
So we're going to go speedily through it. We're starting with the Block Universe show, which is happening in London.
This is really interesting. I mean, it's the first year it's ever happened. They're trying to set themselves up, I think, as sort of a British alternative to something like Performer, which happens in New York. So it's basically a week-long festival that's taking place at multiple venues across London, so from the ICA to Somerset House to dance venues and sort of art spaces. And it's basically devoted to performance art. So a lot of female artists, a real breadth of work. So everything from choreography to narrative performances to vocal pieces, kind of a real smorgasbord of performance.
And where does the UK sit in the kind of chart of performance art kind of hierarchy? I kind of feel like Paris is good for it. I feel like New York is good for it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, New York, I think, is the heart of it. And it's very, very much down to a single individual, which is Rosalie Goldberg, who is the foremost international expert on performance art. And she's like championed its continued existence by setting up Performer in the first place, which is this festival that takes place, which is enormous in New York. And I think her approach and intelligence to that is kind of having a topple-on effect. So performance in London is something we've, in the past 5 years, you're seeing much more of in the contemporary art world. It's very hard to go to an opening without a performance element tacked on in some way.
Or even an art fair. I know Frieze have sort of tried to mix it up and make it a less commercial fair by having people doing sort of weird and wonderful performative things in different corners and sort of parading through the galleries, doing different things, making snakes of slightly embarrassed looking high-powered collectors and things like that. So it kind of breaks, it's a boundary-breaking thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think actually it worked really well at Frieze last year. It really invigorated and gave it some life. And I think that's really the whole thing. I think people are really looking increasingly for more experiential art. They want something that's sort of beyond just looking at something for 5 minutes on a wall. So a lot of artists that you're seeing emerge, even in like the commercial sector, have a performance section to the work that they're making, which is really interesting. But this one's devoted to like a breadth of approach, a lot of things involving the combination between sculptural objects and choreography. So Eva Rothschild, who is a great Scottish artist, who was, I think she was nominated for the Turner Prize in the past, and Florence Peake, who's Eddie Peake's sister, are both doing kind of interesting takes on sculptural object and movement and body combined.
And do you think this is a bit of a natural check of the art world, which we hear, so we often talk about the art world in terms of prices and zeros and big names. Do you think this is the kind of natural check on it, that there is such a grassroots groundswell of interest in things that you can't buy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a really interesting book that's just come out about Tina Segal, who's won like huge accolades. He has a year-long retrospective at the Stedelijk Museum in Amsterdam at the moment, where every single month he's getting a new performance that's ever increasing number of people involved in it. And it's very much the immateriality about performance, I think, is really interesting. However, these artists are also making strong careers. I mean, the superstardom of Marina Abramović in recent years is definitely an indication that performance is no longer seen as something that it's just sort of an ephemeral little tack on. It actually is kind of a more serious, respected and financially lucrative world to actually make work within. So I don't know, it's being taken a lot more seriously.
And do people, I wonder whether you get the sense when you see these things, you see these pieces being performed and at a festival, this upcoming festival, the Block Universe Festival, whether people are kind of happy not to necessarily have the language to describe it or define it. They just want to see something and feel different at the end of it. You know what I mean?
The great thing about performance, and I'm actually curating the performance program of the Danish Art Fair Chart in August, so I've been going through a real performance sort of deconstruction. I think the wonderful thing is I think people do want to be entertained or experience something or not necessarily have to read about it and just sort of try to work out what it is within a single space. Also, it's sort of, everything can be so transitory at life. It's like there's something about the memory you have of a certain block of time. I think performance can be, because it's anything between like a minute, 5 minutes, an hour, you kind of contain things through time rather than necessarily location. And I think that's quite an interesting shift in the public, that they're becoming much more used to how to experience art in that way.
Cool. We were talking there about Block Universe, which is happening in London. Where on earth is it happening? That's something I didn't look up.
Well, it's multiple venues.
It's all over the place.
So, yes.
Oh, you mentioned the ICA, you mentioned various different places. And we're going to talk about now something that's coming up in Norway. This is Takeshi Murata. He's quite an interesting artist. Mm. Sort of, is it digital, is it not? I suppose you could ask that question about.
I've been keeping an eye on him for a long time, and this is
like a naughty schoolboy.
Yes, okay. Yes, naughty schoolboy in the corner. He basically emerged around the same kind of time as Corey Archangel, and this show is actually curated by Corey's partner, Hannah Mugas, who's in charge of the Kunsthalle Stavanger in Norway, which is a really interesting space, which has been quite controversial in Norway because I think they sold I think Henry Moore or Barbara Hepworth's sculpture, and there was a real, in order to fund the program there. But it's a really contemporary program, and this is Murata's first retrospective survey ever. And he has a really strange, unusual language where a lot of CGI animation, a lot of really kind of digital, weirdly psychedelic sort of still life photography work. He did an amazing piece called Eye Popeye, which I'm really hoping will be on show here, which involves sort of Popeye visiting Olive Oil's grave, trying to kill himself, the fact that a digital avatar can never die. And kind of at one point sort of receiving all these strange sort of the future Popeye in a modern digital world, kind of sitting and being rather lonely. It's kind of amazing.
And is this easy stuff to absorb? Is Takeshi Murata's kind of work, is it the sort of thing that we might see at art fairs? Some of our listeners might be looking to invest in some of this stuff as well. I mean, is it that sort of stuff, or is it the experimental things that stays in a Kunsthalle and is talked about?
I mean, for me personally, Murata's really fun. The work is really engaging. It's really brightly coloured. It's got that kind of accessibility that kind of came with the first wave of post-internet artists, as opposed to the more intellectual, deconstructive vein that seems to be hotter now. It's really sensorial and funny. And a lot of things around monsters. He's increasingly technically fascinating. He was like one of the first people to work with that kind of pixelation of imagery. And now he's working on hard CGI, like animations of monsters and kind of narrative films. You don't have to know anything to enjoy this exhibition.
And you mentioned Corey Archangel. The two of them sort of came out of their starting blocks for sort of post internet art at a similar time, and his work is very funny, very witty, quite personal, despite the fact of what it looks like. And I suppose it has that wit to it. And half of it, you're wondering if it is a cat gif. Half of you is wondering whether it's a comment on cat gifs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but also, I mean, if we're going to talk about in terms of the ideas of investment, I mean, Corey Archangel's really interesting.
Yeah.
Recently at auction, a piece of his that was supposed to be 40, 50 grand, went for $500,000. So obviously these kind of artists, which were, let's say, have emerged in the past 8 years, who were kind of seen as kind of funny, jokey, young, quirky kids, are getting taken increasingly seriously. Hence why they're having solo museum shows. And it's not a strange thing. And it's a kind of language that really appeals to a whole generation of people who grew up on the internet, and a whole generation of people who constantly touch their iPads, of which I think many of our listeners are feeling right now.
And any art dealer worth his salt will have it certainly within easy jacket pocket reach.
Exactly.
And just a final note on the Kunsthalle Stavanger. That's an interesting part of the world. It's sort of out on a limb physically where it is. And the idea of this being a kind of Kunsthalle show where everything gets swept away and a new show kind of gets swept in afterwards. Is that where the likes of Takeshi Murata tend to be shown? Are they in any sort of big, are they in museum collections, national collections?
He's one of those artists that actually comes and blooms and disappears at a point. I think this is quite a big breakthrough thing for him as an individual. I think he's living in upstate New York now. He's very much part of that post-Jeffrey Deitch kind of period of New York is when he really was hot. I think that Stavanger itself is really fascinating as a place, but I love this kind of Kunsthalle model. I'm really interested in looking at the German kind of forerunner of that, and I think Norway's really looking towards that kind of interesting approach of the regionalization and how the contemporary doesn't have to necessarily be in just our capitals. But I mean, the Oslo art scene and the whole Norwegian art scene's quite large at the moment, partly because there's a huge amount of investment available. Yeah. So Norwegian artists in particular are doing very well within Norway.
Sloshing around up there, and it's not just oil. That was Takeshi Murata. That's happening at the Kunsthalle Stavanger in Norway. Our final show that we're going to be talking about is in New York City. It's Philippe Parreno, which is his work is almost slightly performative. It's on the cusp of many things, isn't it?
Well, there's definitely performative elements in this show in particular, which sounds so amazing. I think I mentioned it with you around New Year's as one of my favourites for the year. It's called Hypnosis, but with lots of crazy, strange punctuation in that process. And there's regular piano performances live and recorded throughout it. There's a kind of performative element in these amazing light sort of pieces. There are 26 of these marquee pieces that are going to be shown there. There's also a Tino Segal Parreno collaboration which was shown at the Palais de Tokyo, which is a strange girl kind of enacting this manga character that Parreno created, Anne Lee. It's going to be an incredible exhibition, definitely one of the best things to see in New York this summer. Interestingly, also shown alongside at the same time that Pierre Huyghe is above the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And the pair of them, I think, really reinvigorated the entire approach to what Paris art could be about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, what was the reputation before and what is it now? I wondered whether it was not so good at contemporary or not so good at feeling contemporary, the Paris art scene, compared to London, where everyone thinks everybody's still living in a garret in Shoreditch doing stuff, which could not be further from the truth, clearly.
No, sadly.
But Paris has got a bit of sort of cultural jet lag somehow, maybe.
Yeah, completely. It was totally and utterly stuck in its amazing Nouvelle Vague history. And artistically, no one cared at all. But increasingly, and I think there's like a real wave of younger emerging galleries and collectors, I think that museums are really taking things seriously, but also particularly because you've got Parreno and Pierre Huyghe and other artists of that kind of generation at the top of their game and really pushing what they're making and making really interesting stuff. So there's this Parreno thing. Definitely, it's installation, it's sort of eerie, it's got music, it's got video, it will be kind of all-encompassing and very, very theatrical, I think, as a space.
And I tend to think, when you mention those two artists as well, I tend to think of these well-known Parisian artists not being laurel resters. I don't see them cropping up in sort of advertising campaigns. I don't see them doing endless sort of, you know, prints and editions and all the rest of it. Am I right? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I feel that there's maybe a little bit more of there's a different attitude perhaps in the Paris galleries that filters down to the Parisian artists that comes through that scene.
Yeah, and small and cliquey.
Yeah. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably...
They're not all going to get pissed at St. John after the show.
No, not really, sadly. No. But that's a very, unfortunately, that lovely hedonism is quite a specifically British thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the art world, and it will always remain that way, I think, sadly. There is a kind of subduedness, obviously that kind of philosophical heritage to French artists, which still imbues a lot of what they do. But there are exceptions. And there are interesting younger artists like Neil Balufa and David Douard, who are doing kind of things that are involving film and space and technology and doing kind of unusual approaches. But there is still that kind of philosophical heavyweight history behind what people do.
There's the lack of shame in being serious about it.
Yes, they can pull off being serious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I think the Germans can too. I actually quite like it when the Germans try to be funny. That's my favourite.
I like that. Yeah.
That I think that works really, really well.
See, that's a performance art piece that we all want to see.
Yes, I think that's called Kippenberger's entire career.
That's called Kippenberger. That was, finally, Philippe Parreno. He's in New York. Where is he in New York?
Oh, it's an amazing space at Park Avenue Armory. It's uptown.
Oh, that's... Okay, cool.
They do a lot of kind of solo exhibitions that are like big installation-based. I saw a wonderful Cardiff and Miller kind of sound piece that you sit in the middle of with like thousands of speakers around you. They really use the space well for different space. This will be wild. It's 55,000 square foot space.
I shall see that. I'm going to go there next month and I'm going to check that out. That's going to be my first port of call. Well, maybe my second. You know what I mean. Before that, we talked about Takeshi Murata, who is in Norway at the Kunsthalle Stavanger. And we started off talking about Block Universe, which is a performance art extravaganza across many London venues. Check that out if you are in town. Francesca Gavin, what a wonderful joy it is to have you talking us through the high points of the art calendar as usual. Thank you very much indeed. That brings us to the end of this edition of the Monocle Arts Review. I've been Robert Bound. My producers were Holly Fisher and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again tomorrow for our music review, but for now, thanks very much for tuning in.